Welcome back to episode 2 of this special 3-part series of podcasts from CIPR Cymru. Recorded in February 2021 as part of the Global Alliance Ethics Month, these podcasts talk about ethical communications in a post-Trump, mid-COVID and never-ending Brexit era. Open, honest and accurate communication has never been more important, and yet public trust in data and content has been significantly damaged by arguably unethical practices surrounding the perpetuation of fake news. So, what are we as PR practitioners doing to make sure our practice is ethical? And how should we be helping our clients and organisations to rebuild trust in public relations, media channels and public debate? In this episode, CIPR President Mandy Pearce chairs a discussion with 4 PR practitioners who are actively discussing ethics in the public relations industry. We heard from Ben Verinder in part 1. So in part 2, you'll hear from Trevor Morris, Sutta Singh, and Professor Anne Gregory, as they give their views on the question, ethics is an absolute and inviolate ethos, or is that just plain naive? Over to Mandy.
Thank you very much for being with us. I'm going to ask each speaker to speak for about 4 or 5 minutes. Ben's already given us a lot to think about, so I'm going to ask the other speakers just to outline some of the ethical points of interest that they wanted to make, and then we will go to a bit of an open discussion and open for questions. So do please sort of absorb everything Ben has said and what our speakers say, and we're looking forward to your questions. So I'm going to go to Trevor first. Really lovely to have you with us, Trevor. Would you like to just give us a sort of a very quick overview, obviously author of a fantastic book with lots of content, so a lot to say. Thank you.
Hi, thank you everybody. Thank you for inviting me. Just 4 points that I want to make, some of which, to be honest, Ben has touched on already in his excellent presentation. But firstly, that clearly ethics change over time and place. In my same place, I mean geography. As Ben has said, they evolve over time, and there are social and cultural evolutions go on. And again, as Ben has said, there's almost all ethical codes that you talk about, and indeed all religions, broadly agree on things like kindness, honesty, those kinds of things. So given that, given the number of people who are, at least in theory, share the same kinds of ethical, moral values, how come there is so much disagreement? And of course, the devil is always in the detail, which again plays to Ben's point that we need to think about all these things all the time, because our views, which we may believe are ethical, may be seen as unethical by other people. And I think there's a slight dangerous tendency for people to think anybody who disagrees with them is behaving unethically. The biggest area of difference when you get beyond the be honest, be transparent, be kind, is actually on sort of social value ethics. If you just look at the whole thing, about rights, equality, gender, sexuality, all those kinds of things, that's where some of the really big debates come in. And, are there absolute rights and wrong on that? And what's right today, will that be right tomorrow? I think Ben touched on, will working for a meat manufacturer be seen as unethical in 5 years' time? Some people already think working for carbon-based organisations, oil companies, is unethical. Can't say I share that view, but that's what some people think. So anyway, so first point, ethics changes over time and place. The second point I'd like to make, which again touches on something Ben had said, is I think people need to be really careful within the industry about using ethics to virtue signal. There's a lot of people, they're almost sort of taking a priestly position that, I am ethical, my company is ethical. So you know exactly what is right, and it's fixed, and it's like a sort of religious morality it's kind of given. I think when people do that, I think it sounds rather meaningless saying, I am ethical, my organization is ethical. I think there's a danger, actually, if you keep on talking externally about the need for ethics, you actually start to undermine confidence unnecessarily. And the most important way of showing that you care about ethics is to show it, to do it, not to keep on, you know, don't tell me, show me. So avoid using ethics as a virtue signal. Aren't I a good person? Aren't I a good, don't I have a good firm because it's ethical? And if everybody starts from the point of view that you will undoubtedly have done things, you may think of yourself as ethical, but you will undoubtedly done things that other people think of as unethical. And if you start from that position, I think that you then start to be more understanding, more empathetic, and actually get away from some of the silo mentality that is bedeviling kind of modern communication. So that's my point two, don't use ethics to virtue signal. Point three, don't assume people who disagree with you are unethical. And again, one of the things that's worrying me a bit, apart from people sort of trying to claim to be ethical as though they know the whole truth, is the accusing the other side of being unethical. Occasionally that may be true, but it just negates rational argument. And Ben made a really good point about ethics. It's about conscious reflection. It's not entirely an instinctive thing. You need to think about it and weigh it up. And it's about weighing up evidence and putting together an argument, hopefully based on evidence and not based on abusing people and name calling. And calling people unethical can just become a form of abusive, you know, name calling. And again, is one of the things I think discredited a lot of communication over the last 5-6 years. And social media undoubtedly has fueled that in part, because you get that polarization of argument and lose what's in the middle. So let's please try and keep to rational argument and not use, say, ethics as a term of abuse either, or being unethical as a term of abuse, unless it really is. And then the final thing I think on ethics, just want to say, is that whilst, I mean, I think codes are absolutely necessary, the truth of the matter is that the codes in all organisations are not often used, as in people don't pick them up and look at them as they're making decisions. And quite often you're making ethical decisions as you go along. You'll not be able to pull down the file. So how do you do that? And I think that just comes down to a feeling of, do I believe this will hurt or wrong people unfairly, whatever it is I'm doing? Though even that is not always straightforward, because does hurt or harm, is that emotional hurt or harm? Because then you get into the whole thing of freedom of speech, where we have these debates now about people being platformed because what they're going to say would be harmful or hurtful to people. But it's not a measurable physical harm, it's an emotional harm. Now, is that unethical or not? And there's a whole debate going on there. And I suspect we'll be in a different place in 5 years' time from where we are today. So broadly, that's my view, is ethics changes over time and place. So we always need to think about it, that actually virtue signaling your ethics may almost be unethical in a sense. Don't assume that people who disagree with you are unethical. They have another point of view, and we should be, as we've talked about, you should be trying to understand other points of view. Good PR involves empathy, involves putting yourself in somebody else's position. And you can never persuade people if you don't put yourself in their position. All you're doing is shouting at them or telling them what to do. That's not persuasion. That's not good communication. And then just, I would, my own view would be, and this is not sort of going to great academic thinking or philosophy or theology, but it, and based in lots of sort of religious thought as well, is try not to hurt people unnecessarily. Try not to do any harm. of course, what is doing good is open to debate. So that's my contribution.
Thank you, Trevor. That's great. I'm going to hand over to Sudha to give us her thoughts. Lots of really interesting questions being posed there by Trevor to think about. And I'm going to hand over to Sudha. Thank you.
Okay, let me unmute myself. Hi, everyone. Thank you, Mandy. And what a fantastic lineup of people over here. I'm really privileged to be here. We've heard such wonderful things. And right at the start, I'd like to say, this is full disclosure, that I have worked for two agencies that have fallen by the wayside because of their ethical behavior, the conduct and the clients that they work for. One of them was Bell Pottinger, where I was a newbie. I was barely there for 6 months. So sort of watched it from the sidelines, you know, the car wreck that was imminent. And the other one was an agency that I worked for in India that got embroiled in a bigger sort of issue. And this was to do with the government, it was to do with the clients, the corporates, and it was to do with some of the biggest corporates in India, based out of India. Some of them very well known for their ethics and the others not so well known for their ethics. In that situation in India, I was in front and center of it. Because I could see my clients involved in that entire process. And at BP, I was on the sidelines and I thought, oh no, it can't be happening to me for the second time. I don't think it happens to anyone once. And so twice was like a bit of a tragedy. So I have a few thoughts. I haven't written out a speech, but I have a few thoughts that I have put down, and I'll just, touch on those issues. So just to start off, so there are two ways to influence human behavior according to Simon Sinek. And one, you can either manipulate it or you can inspire it. And I thought there was a relation in relation to public relations and communicators. This is like very, very apt. We really need to think about that part of it. Since last year, you know, we are at the stage where we are ready to believe the worst of people. There is a lack of trust, lack of empathy. Divisions are deep. The fissures are deep. You know, we have issues around vaccine hesitancy. We have the anti-vaxxers. We have misinformation. We have, you know, there was the recent Supreme Court case on which ruled against, you know, the follow to mothers and maternity care. And there is a university tracking system for students. We saw how that panned out. And we've seen it within our own agency that profitable businesses have claimed furlough for employees while paying leaders within our agency and outside, while paying leaders good salaries, great salaries. So this discussion is really timely. You know, ethical values are supposed to be the underpinning that give organizations a social license to operate, and PR professionals are supposed to be the torchbearers for ethical considerations for clients and themselves. I don't know if this is something that we need to think. Do we really want to be those torchbearers? And are we, do we have the expertise? Do we have the skills and the capabilities to be those torchbearers? However, it is important to remember that disinformation and manipulation of information and data are well-established tools that PR practitioners work with. We use it to demonstrate our ability to change behaviors and also demonstrate to clients our capability to do work and win all sorts of fantastic mandates. The question here is, are we like defense lawyers who are ethically bound to defend their clients to the best of their ability, even if they're morally opposed to their clients' crimes? Does every organization have the right to representation and put forward their view? Are we clear on this topic? I don't think we are clear on this issue at all. And as practitioners, we need to think really strongly about this, because that will take away some of the weight that we are constantly grappling with, you know, on ethics. The speakers before me have spoken about values, morality, and ethics. So they've set the stone and set the foundation for what we need to do. We've also heard that there is no absolute right or wrong. That is a bit worrying, because that leaves us with a lot of gray to navigate. And, you know, with the levels of understanding about ethics in PR and the sort of skills that we have in the industry at this point in time, that gray is not good for us as practitioners. So there needs to be, you know, I think we, while not everything can be decided piecemeal, I think it is easier for people to understand. We have the code of conduct that the CIPR has and Global Alliance has, and, you know, that we can look at and follow. But I think there are some more questions that need to be answered so that more people can get on board and more people can understand and start thinking about these issues. So my position on this, there are four things that I have said. And my position on this is that ethics must be the guiding principle for everything we do as practitioners. And I have come to this place, you know, I am at a certain age, I'm at a stage where I run my own consultancy. I control who I work with and who I don't work with. And I have the freedom and the independence to make those choices. And I know that previously in my life, as at the agency, I gave up some of those choices because I was working at an agency. So I believe that it must be a guiding principle, but I do not think practitioners can come to that. All practitioners can come to that position because they're conflicted, you know, with their loyalty to the agency, to the client, et cetera. So we must help them to navigate this conflict better. I do not believe that there's a cultural lens to ethics. What is ethical in India is ethical in the UK. People tend to confuse local practices with what is acceptable. For example, it was and is fairly common for large multinationals to bribe local officials for regulatory clearances if they wanted to reduce the time or the number of hurdles that they had to jump. That does not mean that bribery is acceptable or that bribery is legal. And sometimes I think we, like Trevor or Ben, I think mentioned, is that we also have to think about what is legal and what is ethical, because often legal frameworks are in place to help us make ethical discussions, decisions. Not all the time, but often that is the case. As an industry, my second, third point is, as an industry, we pay lip service to ethics. Practitioners are not sufficiently empowered to take a stand. And I've already mentioned that, touched on that, is that we need to help them navigate that gray area. What is that gray area? So that, and not make it too difficult for them to get to that place where the decision-making can happen. For example, how are we setting expectations for clients? You know, the client briefs you on something, and are you empowering the practitioner sufficiently so that they can make decisions at that point in time, or go back and talk to their superiors or someone within the organization to make the decisions? For most clients, for a lot of clients, when we talk about ethics, because, you know, we PR practitioners are well known as, you know, the perception that we have is of spin doctors, of people who, you know, pull stories out, who have the capability to talk to editors and change headlines. Mm-hmm. And that is something that really, you know, that doesn't support our cause at all, you know, being known for these things. Our practitioners at the younger level, at the mid level, are they able to take a stand and tell clients that this is not the right thing to do? That the better thing to do would be, you know, to put out their side of the story, but not try to, you know, manipulate the media for their benefit. The next point is, what is ethical for one agency should be unethical for another. Who draws the boundaries and the red lines that cannot be crossed? And of course, here I come from a very personal point of view. You know, BP as an organization, I was barely there for 6 months. I was not involved in the client at all, but I saw that it was more than that one client that they had. It was made up of a fantastic bunch of young and old people who were doing incredible work that had nothing to do with, politics or manipulation or behavior change, they were doing some great work. And so when the agency sort of was forced to shut down, we did not give it a consideration as to, you know, what's going to happen to the people, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we need to be able to empower people more on these, you know, decisions on who's drawing the line on what can be crossed. You know, PRCA has done a brilliant job. I'm a part of the PRCA and I totally stand by the decisions that they have taken because there has to be some accountability. But some examples that I'd like to share is, you know, people are still working on the Saudi account. People are still working on MBS, Qatar, Hong Kong. One of the biggest tragedies in India was the Bhopal gas tragedy that happened much before, you know, a lot of the people in this call were born. And it killed generations of people and continues to impact generations of people. And the company that was involved was Union Carbide. You know, ethics and morality and legal considerations do not take anything into view. And nobody is worried about those people. Nobody has thought about those people. And Dow Chemicals, the owner of Union Carbide, is not going to do anything about those people. But there are agencies that are working on that business. And maybe there are some parts of the business that are great and they're doing great. But what is ethical? You know, we need to be, somebody needs to be able to say, okay, they've done this. They cannot do this or we will not work with them. I am as confused as people who are listening to this and appreciate a lot of advice on this. Another example is the founder of BlackRock, who is one of the biggest donors to the Republican campaign. And we know what the Republicans have done on misinformation and you know, calling out the elections and the entire democratic process in the US. But you'd be surprised to know or not surprised to know that BlackRock is the winner of a top diversity award. There has to be some ethical consideration here, right? How can you be the organization whose founder is paying so much of money? And this is aside from politics, because people can have different leanings. But where does ethics come into it? How do we manage and how do we create more transparency on how to make decisions? This is one of the biggest, for me, I think it's a conundrum. I keep thinking about it all the time. My last one is, I think Anne is going to touch on this, is in this age of misinformation and fake news, what is the role of a PR practitioner? Because we often are disseminating, we don't think it is misinformation, but it is a different side of a story which may come out as a misinformation. And there are people who are actively spreading misinformation that is totally different. You know, the issues around AI and ethics and transparency and bias and privacy, which Anne will probably touch on. I'll just end with, you know, something quoting Mary Beard. There was an article either yesterday or today about ethics and consumption. And I found it, I thought, okay, this is just, I think she wrote it for me. So I just read those couple of lines because it just shows the entire conundrum in it. So she has written that the most galling to me is that pitting money against morality is a regressive dilemma. The people who can most afford to pay the ethical way are the uber rich. Those battling against poverty line don't have the option but to become complicit in well-being issues, clothing made in questionable conditions. They certainly can't justify moving to a higher fee fund, and this was because about a pension fund, because it doesn't invest in coal or tobacco. And I think that is a big conundrum. You know, we've seen Boohoo, who pays people, you know, its workers some miserable amounts of money, and that hasn't stopped people from buying. But the people who are buying from there are also people who do not have enough of money. And this is an ethical question. And how are we going to sort of, you know, be able to address these issues if we as practitioners are ourselves confused? My last this in quote is, without ethical culture, there's no salvation for humanity. And this was Albert Einstein a long, long time ago. So I'll end with that.
Thank you, Sudhir. Lots of really interesting points, and that point around our ability to behave ethically dependent on economic pressures as well is really important, I think. I'm going to hand over to Anne, who's going to talk to us for a few minutes, and then we will open up for questions. So, Anne, would you like to take your section forward?
Yes, I'm very aware, thank you, that I'm between you and questions, so I'll try and keep this relatively brief. And the topic of our session today is ethical communications in a post-Brexit, mid-COVID and never-ending Brexit era. So I think there's a commonality around what's happening in the discourse around Trump, COVID and Brexit. So it's the proliferation of conspiracy theories, disinformation, alternative facts, bots pumping out propaganda, algorithms feeding back self-reinforcing opinions and narrowing access to alternative views, extremes and divisions being amplified. And it's a startling fact to me that more people have visited disinformation sites to find out about COVID than have visited the World Health Organization website. So there's a hunger for information almost from anywhere and on everything. And in the UK, you know, bringing it nearer to home, we've never seen such contested information and division as created by Brexit, to the point where it feels as if our democracy was almost destabilized and where healing is going to take many, many years, if ever. And I can say the same about America and Trumpism. So I just want to add to the discussion a little bit, because I think so the groundwork, the heavy lifting on ethical considerations has been done by my previous speakers, and I thank you for that. But just to take and fold in the discussion in a slightly different direction, which is about artificial intelligence. And I think, again, to capture the title of our panel, we are being naive, and I think we're being negligent, not just naive, but negligent in not getting more involved in the debate about artificial intelligence. If we think about the world in which we live at the moment, where really it's impossible, virtually impossible to live off grid anymore. We have no choice. And I love the phrase that Ben used about we live in a commercial democracy. I'm not sure if it's democratic, Ben, but we certainly live in a commercial something as far as the artificial world is concerned. And we live in a world of algorithmic inflammation, as Shoshana Zuboff calls it, driven by the business model of big platforms. And their currency is information. And they share that currency with us. In their case, their currency is used for profit. And in our case, information is also being commodified, I think. And our world is becoming commodified as we go towards data-driven and data-enlightened decision-making in public relations. And artificial intelligence, I think, is permeating and infusing our world by default. And we, as a profession that is supposed to be involved in the fully functioning of society, I think, need to step into this space and start asking some questions of ourselves and others. I think it's a pressing ethical requirement for public relations professionals to get involved in this debate. And I would suggest that it's one of our biggest ethical issues right now, and we're not giving it the space that we need to. So I just make three points about AI in society, in our organizations, and in our professions. I'll make them quite briefly. So I think as a profession, we need to talk about how information is shaping our society, and how AI is driving us in a direction And we are partly the drivers of that direction, and we need to ask ourselves some questions. So, for example, what's trending seems to shape the public debate on any one time. And we hear incessant conversation about content is king, get it out there, get noticed. So what about the quality of that content? And to what purpose are we pumping out that content? And are we actually promoting a wholesome and healthy society by pumping out that content? I'll give you another example, which is about the shaping of news. And we've all heard about the debate in Australia at the moment, and Facebook and the Australian government getting into a tussle. But news stories are taken down if they're not popular. You know, you've got an online website for a news story. If it's not trending within 20 minutes, it's taken down. What is that doing for our news agenda? And what are we as public relations professionals saying about that? And how are we supporting our journalistic colleagues in ensuring that good and important things come onto the public agenda for debate? Moving on then to our organisations. During COVID, we've seen a massive shift towards AI business decision making and processes. And we've seen jobs being replaced that will never come back because of automation and AI. And who is leading the ethical debate in our organisations on what this means for employees? Who's going to have a job? Who's going to take the responsibility for upskilling the workforce? Now, I know that's HR, but who's going to start the debate on the nature of the organisations that we're moving into the future? And what about the nature of those organisations? Are they going to be dispersed? Are we going to work at home? What does organisation mean? And what sort of organisational cultures are we going to build? And what's the role of public relations professionals in binding together groups of people within organisations when the form of organisations is shifting? What about our relationship with customers? I don't know about you, but I mean, you heard the story, 20 hours to speak to a person from a bank the other day. And I don't want to talk to a bot. I don't want to talk to a bot who is constantly collecting data from the information that I'm exchanging with them and aggregating that, putting it together with other information. I want to talk to a human being. And yet, in the name of efficiency, our organizations are moving towards artificial agents. What about decision-making in the boardroom? Data-driven is what we're being told. Government is making data-driven decisions right now. Well, what about mutant educational algorithms? What about the people who lie under those data-driven decisions? And where is our voice within our organizations saying, just because you can, doesn't mean you should? And what about issues around how AI systems are engineered and implemented, and how the algorithms are programmed to automatically build in organizational advantage and to ignore bias, as Sudha alluded to earlier? And what about privacy and the power that organizations who have the resources can accrete to themselves by enabling their organization to be AI empowered? So a huge role for us in governance. We need to step up to the plate and help ensure that those decisions around how AI is used and implemented and developed and designed in organization are not left to the techies. Because at the end of the day, society is about people and organizations about people. And we need to ensure that those dimensions are there. And then bringing it closer to home to our own profession. We love the shiny toys, don't we? We love the shiny toys of AI and the things that technology can give us. And our work now is absolutely infused with AI, whether or not we know it or not. But from research to selecting the targets and remote, that word is being used increasingly. Targets. These are people we're talking about. Designing content based on data, looking at the selection of channels, the content itself being automated, automatic writing, bots and our own agents that we're setting up to have those conversations with people. Who is monitoring those bots? What right do we have to remove people from those conversations? Big questions for us about, are we using our power as public relations professionals and our resources responsibly? Big questions about the transparency of what we do and what we know about our audiences and how we use that information. And if we're combining it with personality profiling to drive people's behavior. I hate that word. And behavioral economics, you know, what gives us the right to drive anybody's behavior? And how do we collect and aggregate news data about our audiences? How do we keep it safe and secure? And what about the individual tools that we use? I talked about chatbots. And what about the ethics of tagging and facial recognition, bias in the systems that we commission? So what questions do we ask ourselves when we're taking advantage of automation and AI in our day-to-day practice? So I'm going to shut up now. I've asked a lot of questions and providing answers, but I think we really need to start thinking about these things in a systematic manner. I think we're at one of those Kairos moments, those moments of inflection as a profession about what we should do on AI and how we should intervene and the contribution that we can make in society, in our organizations, in governance, and in use of these tools ourselves. And we need to think carefully about how we set the ethical standards for our own practice.
Thanks to Mandy, Trevor, Sutta, and Anne, and thanks to you for listening. In the final episode of this three-part series, Mandy and the panel answer questions from our virtual audience. So see you next time. And don't forget, you can log 5 points against the CPD ethics strand on the CIPR My CPD portal for listening to this and the other episodes.